So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
Deck your home with Blinds.com. DIY or let us install. Free design consultation. Plus free samples and free shipping.
Ho, ho, ho! Blinds.com invented a better way to buy custom high-quality window treatments with no showroom markups or waiting around for quotes from pushy salespeople, saving you time and money for the holidays with upfront pricing right on our website.
Go right now to Blinds.com. Satisfaction guaranteed.
Satisfaction guaranteed.
Head to Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Labor and Energy Alliance or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey.
The Labor and Energy Alliance would like to thank the following organizations for your generosity and support. Together, we are educating listeners and changing the narrative, one broadcast at a time. The American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, PBF Energy, Monroe Energy, Steam Fitters Local 420, EQT Corporation, Marcellus Shale Coalition, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters, United Steelworkers, National Mining Association, and the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers.
Consider a career with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. As a Boilermaker apprentice, you'll earn while you learn. We offer excellent wages and benefits, and as part of our no-cost, hands-on apprenticeship program, you'll learn from the best in state-of-the-art training centers and on the job. Become a union Boilermaker and get on your way to a great career.
Visit Boilermakers.org or call 844-IBB-WELD.
And guess where this additional billion gallons of biofuel is going to come from? It's going to come from abroad. That's not an American First energy policy. We're in this together. Labor's in this. Building trades are in this. Refiners are in this. American consumers need us to do this too.
Now across the Jacob Media Network, welcome to the Labor and Energy Show special, exclusively presented by the PBF Energy Paulsboro Refinery and the PBF Delaware City Refinery, in collaboration with the labor unions that build our communities.
If you fix this RINs issue, you're looking at a reduction of 25 to 30 cents a gallon.
This is the Labor and Energy Show, bringing labor leaders, national experts, and political influencers together to educate you about fancy terms like RINs and RGGI, while explaining the truth about energy independence. Welcome to the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley and beyond, welcome to the Labor and Energy Show. We've got a fantastic broadcast tonight. I can tell you that what's really cool about tonight is that it's the first time we've been live in literally, I can't tell you how long. And so I couldn't be more excited about our guest tonight. We're going to be talking about a lot of cool stuff and a lot of stuff that really matters. Okay. And so, you know, when we talk about labor and energy, okay, this show is going to epitomize that. Okay. And our guest is from the Midwest, and I want to bring into the program Ryan Sistad, Executive Director, Better in Our Backyard. Ryan, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you doing?
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I can tell you this. So I know somebody who's been incredibly busy. You have a lot going on, and we're going to be talking about the expo that Better in Our Backyard is hosting this coming week, and it's going to be huge. Okay, and a lot of stuff you're going to be doing. We're going to talk about it tonight. But before we do, and Ryan's no stranger to the broadcast, remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, so my name is Ryan Sistad. I'm the executive director of Better in Our Backyard, and our mission is to promote responsible industrial development. And we were founded in Duluth, Minnesota, by a company called Enbridge, and also another company called Twin Metals Minnesota, Polymet, now known as New Range Copper Nickel. So we're founded by both mining and energy companies. And during the COVID time period, we kind of rebranded on how we advocated for responsible industrial development. And then once we came out of COVID, we focused a lot on, you know, digital advocacy via social media. And some of the, you know, I would say formula, if you will, that we developed was translatable into other states. So we've moved into Michigan. We've moved into Wisconsin. We're advocating for projects in Idaho, Arizona, Alaska, Wyoming, Nevada. I think, Joe, when we first met, we were just in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and in Michigan. And now we're in 10 different states advocating for, you know, 20 different projects, both in the energy space and in the mining space. And then my background is in project management. I used to work in construction during college, a little bit of construction in high school. And then I was a young PM for a little while. For an electrical contractor before I got the opportunity to run Better in Our Backyard. I just love your show. I love listening in. You know, my dad's a lifelong Teamster. My grandpa's a retired lifelong union iron worker. So I grew up learning a lot about the issues that your viewers and your listeners care about most.
So did you say your grandfather was an iron worker?
Yep. Lifelong. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So I'm an iron worker as well. Iron workers local 401.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So there's some nice
history. For context, just in case of maybe, I don't know if you're in that area ever, where he, from my understanding, he was kind of one of the, he helped build a lot of the crystal sugar plants in North Dakota and Northwest Minnesota. So that's kind of where he did a lot of his work, or that's where he kind of, you know, built his career.
And it's interesting because, you know, as a union iron worker, you know, I was a structural iron worker. My father was the business manager of the union. And certainly I had the opportunity a number of times to work at Sun Oil and some of the plants in the region. And certainly, you know, I was aware of our energy community and our energy sector because obviously as an iron worker, we work in a lot of the places. However, I will tell you that, like everybody else, you know, you take things for granted. And so I had the opportunity, like I said, to work in some of those places. But it wasn't until a couple years ago when they shut down the PES refinery that I really got engaged, okay, in what's going on. And certainly it's a totally different ball game. And you know, So shout out to your grandfather and your father, of course. I noticed that we're going to talk, before we get into the expo, we're going to talk a little bit about Better in Our Backyard, okay? And because first of all, and we talked about this, and of course I remembered when I asked this question, but for our listeners, and see, sometimes, especially a couple years ago, when we first start getting into the labor, we do the labor show here in Philly, but you know, we just started doing a labor and energy show 3-4 years ago. And so, man, it was a different language, okay? And energy and you know, a lot of stuff that's going on that has to do with energy and our building trades because they are aligned. But having said that, it can be a different language. Tell us a little bit about why Better in Our Backyard. I have an idea But if you would talk about that, because it's an interesting story.
Well, the original reason why it was created is that in Minnesota, we have a pretty rich history of mining. We've been mining iron ore, and now they call it taconite mining. We've been mining for over 130 years, and taconite and iron ore mining is what you need for steel making. So a lot of the, steel facilities or steel plants that you see, say, in Indiana or Ohio or different parts of the country, 60 to 70% of the iron ore needed to make the steel that's going through those facilities is coming from either Minnesota or from the UP of Michigan. But also in northeastern Minnesota, not only do we have a lot of taconite, but we also have a lot of copper, nickel, and cobalt reserves. So northeastern Minnesota is blessed with to have a third of the U.S. copper reserves, estimated copper reserves, I should say, 90% of U.S. nickel reserves, and roughly 80% of U.S. cobalt reserves. And all three of those minerals are needed in defense technologies, renewable energy technologies, in our cell phones, and our everyday basically way of life. And, as you see other technologies like AI, or you hear about data centers being built, or different technologies just coming through the pipeline, we're going to need more copper and we're going to need more nickel and cobalt. And in Minnesota, even though we've been proving that we can mine iron ore for years safely and responsibly, there's a lot of groups or anti-mining groups in Minnesota that are looking to stop projects, say like a Twin Metals Minnesota, which is looking to mine copper, nickel, and cobalt in northeastern Minnesota, or say like a New Range copper, nickel, North Bend project. There's a lot of NGOs that are very well funded that are going against these projects. And unfortunately, they're going against projects that are not only good for national security and for our everyday demands and what we're going to need both today and tomorrow. But a lot of these projects, all of them in Minnesota actually have PLA agreements. So meaning that when the project's going to be built, it's going to be using all union labor. And so, given my background, when I saw, I didn't really know too much about mining. I moved to Duluth, Minnesota when I was 21. I'm 31 now. I didn't really know too much about mining until I was 22, 23, and so until I started visiting some of the taconite mines in the area. And when I saw that a lot of these NGOs were going against proposed projects, I just kind of, in a weird way, whether it's right or wrong, it just felt a little personal when I saw some of these groups looking to stop these projects, because I felt like they were taking away future and potential opportunities from, men and women like my dad or like my grandpa.
Well, let me just jump in there.
Families.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. And what's interesting about it, okay, and so, and I know you're, my first thought of better in our backyard is the truth is, and on your website, it talks about, being environmentally sound. Okay. And since I've been in this industry as well, from a media standpoint, I have not met anybody in our mining industry. Okay. In our petrochemical or our natural gas industries who have not been pro environmental. Okay. And we're going to get into this because the last I checked, Ryan, the atmosphere, okay, the ozone level, okay, emissions cover the whole entire planet. Okay. And listen, we all care incredibly much about the environment. That's why in the United States, our standards are the highest on the planet. Okay. And when you talk about these NGOs and they come in and they shut these projects down, I just wonder what happens next. That's sarcasm, by the way. That's sarcasm.
Well, and I would argue that they're like hurting the environment more than they're actually helping it, because you're just, to add your point, I think that's the point you're trying to get to is, or not trying to, they're basically offshoring the pollution to a different part of the world that's not going to do it as responsibly.
Yes. So since they started this movement to shut our resources down, the emissions have gone up. In the planet. Okay. And so, I being a little sarcastic, but I'm not one of those guys under any circumstances says we don't have issues. We don't have to prioritize the environment. Okay. I'm not like that. I don't even let, since we started our show, I don't let anybody come on here and say it's all big hoax. I don't even get into that conversation, but I am 100% sure one thing: the United States does it better. So when I listen and just tell me if I'm right, better in our backyard, okay, I'm going to take a shot at this. It's been a while, but better that we do it, because not only do we do it better, but we do it more efficiently and more environmentally clean. Now, am I in the ballpark there? If I'm not, that's cool.
Yeah,
but
yeah, and I probably should have got to the point quicker on why it was created. Yeah, basically, in short, we wanted the region and, you know, many of the pro industry folks in Minnesota, they wanted to create a group that could be out there to go up against the NGOs that were spreading a lot of false claims about projects or operations, mining operations or anything else in Minnesota. And they wanted a group to be an answer to that, to, you know, basically stand up for industry in Minnesota and promote like the positive benefits of industry and how we are doing it responsibly. Literally in the name, why it's better to do it in our backyard, which is basically similar to the points that we just talked about.
And it's why we started the Labor and Energy Alliance here. Okay. You know, yes, our jobs, I mean, just incredible. You know, the amount of jobs that, and like you said, union jobs, and what's the difference between union and non-union? Well, one's a job, one's a career, okay? And family sustaining and great for the tax base and all those things. But even I don't sit around and go, well, we'll sacrifice the planet for our jobs. I don't even get into that. I already know we do it better than they do overseas in China, where a lot of the projects that you're talking about, okay, that work gets hijacked to China because we shut it down or we don't allow it to happen in the United States. So, you know, who's protesting there? I don't see anybody protesting at the ports, right? Where, you know, so we shut ourselves down. This is elementary, okay? I told you, I'm an iron worker, which there's some really incredibly smart iron workers, I'll tell you that. I wasn't one of them, but I'm just saying, at the end of the day, it doesn't take a rocket science. The need to supply, the demand doesn't stop. So what do? We shut ourselves down, and then we allow it to be imported here from countries whose environmental standards, whose safety and efficiency standards aren't even close to ours. So, you know, I love better in our backyard, okay? And you mentioned northern Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Upper Peninsula in Michigan, okay, rural areas in Arizona. You guys are spreading like wildfire.
Yeah, we have been, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's kind of personally, I appreciate that, by the way. I appreciate the compliments, Joe. It's been growing quite a bit, and it's pretty surreal looking back on it too, just personally and professionally, just to what it was when I was running it the first year or two. You're trying to figure out what you do every day. I think, you know, and that's probably the entrepreneur in me, but you know, when you start any business, you know, it's, you know, there's some learning curves and there's some growing pains. And once you move through that, then all of a sudden, yeah, you start growing like crazy. And, you know, it took me 3 years to get into another state. It took me 5 years to get into three or four states. And then now in the last, you know, 15 months, we've gone into five or six new states.
So you,
in terms of which projects that we're representing. So it's spreading quickly. I've had a part-time guy help me out the last couple of years. His name's Jacob, bright young kid, working with me. He just graduated from the U of M, and we just offered him a full-time job a few weeks ago. And he, luckily for me, he accepted it. And so it's just pretty cool to see that, you know, we went from an association barely surviving those first few years to now we're growing and doing well and hiring people.
So you mentioned, you guys started it with Enbridge. Tell our listeners a little bit about Enbridge, if you would.
Enbridge, Enbridge always had a great presence amongst a lot of my family in northern Minnesota with their pipeline called Line 3. And when Enbridge became a part of Better in Our Backyard, part of the reason why they joined us is that at the time they were looking to permit the Line 3 replacement project. So they weren't building a new pipeline. They were just simply replacing an existing one, an aging one, and it ended up becoming the most studied and extensive permitting or extensive reviewed project or pipeline project in Minnesota's history. And when I saw that, you know, a lot of politicians were going against it and then turning around and looking for like the IBW's endorsement or the ironworkers endorsement.
I know, it's crazy.
You know, but they're going against projects that have PLA agreements. I just got really annoyed. And that pipeline, I live in Duluth, but I grew up in northwestern Minnesota. And that pipeline runs through a lot of communities like that my older brother was born in, that my grandpa and grandma were born in. And, you know, I know a lot of these families that, you know, you can just see the economic growth or like just how much they would be positively impacted by the economic impact. And on top of, you know, the best point of it all is that, you know, it's better for the environment to replace a pipeline. I'd rather have crude oil going through a pipe than having a couple thousand trucks deliver oil every day on the highway.
Yeah, just hold off on that. Just give me one second. Yeah. And look, we love our Teamsters, right? We love them, right? They do an incredible job. We know that, right? Your father was a Teamster, for crying out loud. Okay. Incredible union, strong union. And the truck drivers do an incredible, you know, as much technology that comes to us, they still can't do anything without the trucks. Okay. However, if you're going to look at, and if you're going to look at safety, and if you're going to look at, you know, energy, security, okay, in regards to safety, security, what's safer than a pipeline? Okay. And, you know, just the natural, you know, situation when you're talking about, you know, the fuel getting transported by truck. And again, we have the best on the planet, so I feel safe with them 100%. However, you're not going to get, if safety is your thing and efficiency is your thing, why are you shutting the pipelines down? You should be wanting the pipelines, and you should be advocating on behalf of the pipelines. So,
oh, yeah, exactly. Well, and another thing I thought of, too, from, like, the economic impact, and I see your point, too, Joe. I think at the time, or it ended up being over $3 billion that they spent to build that pipeline. Well, it's like, at the time, I mean, that was pre-COVID, before all the inflation, but, you know, it's pretty normal that it takes $1 billion or $1.5 billion to, you know, build a new football stadium or baseball stadium. And I just like, wow, that's like building... You know, since I'm from Minnesota, I'm thinking of U.S. Bank Stadium, where the Vikings played. But I'm like, that's like building three U.S. Bank Stadiums in northern Minnesota.
Now, how'd you become such
what that would do for rural communities?
And how'd you're in Minnesota? How'd you become such a big Eagles fan? I'm just messing with you.
Actually, I'm being serious. The Eagles were. I get a lot of crap for this from my buddies, but the Eagles were kind of my team that I like to, you know, cheer for if the Vikings didn't go that far in the playoffs. So, like, I loved watching Andy Reid's teams, you know, with Brian Westbrook and Donovan McNabb and, you know, and, like, in just their offense. And I just love how Andy Reid ran the team. And then the Eagles, you know, were kind of, you know, before they won the Super Bowl, when Nick Foles stepped in for Carson Wentz, you know, the Eagles kind of had a similar history to the Vikings, you know, just, you know, historically very good teams, you know, having great players like Reggie White historically, but just never could win the Super Bowl. And so I just always naturally cheer for them if the Vikings didn't go that far.
And the thing is, we won our first Super Bowl in Minnesota. So my son works the Super Bowl every year, and he was there, and he said it was sunny in 85. Oh, I'm sorry. just kidding. But no question. Yeah. And listen, you know, you know, obviously that was a blessing, and I just want to, you know, down here in Philly, it's Broad Street. And so I can't tell you how many times I said on the radio, dear Lord, please give me one parade of green. He gave us two. And so, you know, wherever God takes it, he takes it. And I'm not the most religious guy, but when it comes to the Eagles, I am sometimes.
And under two different head coaches too, which is pretty remarkable, you know, like under basically just two different, you know, administrations, if you will.
Yeah, and tomorrow, by the way,
they were able to get two different Super Bowls.
And tomorrow we're going down to Tampa. How the hell, who scheduled it 2 years in a row? I thought, I get it, we're supposed to have a harder schedule, but why are they not coming to us? I'm sick and tired of going down there 99 degrees, right? Anyway, we're getting off a little off track, but I like where we're going. Let's you know, when we talk about, you know, educating people, okay, and when you talk about a lot of the things, you know, and we're going to get into the expo. The whole second part of the show is going to be about the expo, okay? But let's talk about what. So you got into Better in Our Backyard, you know, literally without a background in mining or energy.
No, not really. Outside of just, you know, being, you know, outside of learning about the projects and seeing what was going on when I was working at my, in my previous job.
So mining.
So no, nothing really. I just had a deep passion for it.
And the thing is, and you talked about it, your grandfather and your father's work inspired you. But mining is you know, has taken a beating, okay, and has been a redheaded stepchild for way too long, okay. And when you talk about, we have some of our National Mining Association members on our board, okay, and you know, I can tell you that we, when you talk about mining, and then a lot of people don't understand there's critical minerals, okay, and then of course there's coal, and here in Pennsylvania, my family's from Mahanoy City. My mom's family, and so that's a big coal miner's town. And so, you know, when you talk about mining, it has been a rough road. And our companies and the industry's done an incredible job. Again, with the AI centers coming in, and a lot of and they're here, but I'm just saying, you know, we need our traditional energy. Mining included, huge. Okay, and and having said that, again, our standards for mining. Talk about that in comparison to our you know, our adversaries, and I'll say adversaries in some of the places where they hijack us overseas. But talk about the standards that we possess here in the United States when it comes to mining that people may not know about.
Well, it's a great question. I mean, the standards are very different. I mean, they're obviously they're better than, you know, countries like China or Indonesia. And I would say the other two countries that I think are a very good model, there's some in South America, you know, Australia and Canada have good environmental protections. And right now, though, our issue in the U.S. is that on average, it takes 29 years to permit a new mine or any mine that has federal land on their deposit. So, you know, we can't control where God puts the deposits in our country. And a lot of those, a lot of our great copper deposits or say even coal deposits are on federal land. And so if you're, let's say if I go try to start a new mine and part of my project's on federal land, that opens me up to NEPA. So, you know, I'm going to be, you know, I'm looking at a 29 year permitting timeline between discovery to the deposit and actually bringing that project online or at least getting it fully permitted, where in Australia and Canada, you know, they're 5 to 10 years and they're about 20 years ahead of us. And then the so I guess the point of like the paint just a clear picture on where we're at in comparison to say like let's compare ourselves to China, for example. We want a lot of nickel or we want a lot of cobalt, you know, for our EVs. Like, so let's say you look at a Tesla, you need a lot of nickel and you need a lot of cobalt for an EV battery. Well, a lot of that nickel is coming from Indonesia, and Indonesia is still permitting new mines where they can dump their tailings, and tailings is basically waste after they get a nickel, after they get their nickel out of a deposit. There's still permitting projects where mines can actually dump their waste into the ocean. There's no way that a mine would ever get permitted in the U.S. under those type of restrictions. And then when you look at China, the irony is that they control 15 of the 19 active cobalt mines in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Well, the Democratic Republic of Congo is notorious for child labor.
Okay.
So
right.
A lot of, you know, a lot of our EVs are made up of dirty nickel and cobalt that is coming from exploited labor, child labor.
Well, we all saw Siddharth Kara's videos, right? Child labor.
Yeah.
In them picking it up with their hands. And we can't even do anything about it because it takes us so long to with permitting. And so, what I want to do is we're going to take a quick break. Okay. And we're going to come back. We're going to have more from the Labor and Energy Show in just a minute.
The Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters is proud to present skilled union workers, including the workers that build and maintain our energy infrastructure. The safest, best trained, and most productive carpenters in the country are on the job. Whether it's energy from nuclear, wind, coal, natural gas, or offshore wind, the EAS carpenters are ready to provide the construction need of an energy industry our families depend on. If you're interested in a job in construction, visit EASCarpenters.org or follow us on social at EAS Carpenters.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Labor and Energy Show, proudly presented by PBF Energy, also EQT Corporation. American fuel and petrochemical manufacturers, and Monroe Energy.
First chartered in 1903, Steamfitters Local 420 has been constructing and installing mechanical systems throughout the Delaware Valley for over a century. United by excellence, this local is proud to have worked on projects such as the Sun Oil Refineries, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and the stadiums for all our Philly teams. From helmets to hard hats, Local 420 represents the history of Philadelphia. Steamfitters Local 420. Jim Snell, Business Manager.
This episode is brought to you by Labor First, the leader in healthcare navigation and advocacy for plan sponsors, union members, and retirees. Navigating healthcare isn't easy, especially when it comes to Medicare, and it shouldn't fall on our retiree shoulders alone. That's where Labor First comes in. They work one-on-one with members to help them understand their benefits, resolve issues, and get the care they've earned. From answering tough questions to fixing billing problems, Labor First is in your corner every step of the way. No call centers, no runaround, just healthcare advocates who care. Labor First was founded by a proud Teamster son and grandson. For over 60 years, his father and grandfather led Teamsters Local 837 in Philadelphia with pride, purpose, and grit. That same union spirit runs through everything Labor First does today. Now, hundreds of union health plans trust Labor First as a true partner, delivering results, supporting members, and never forgetting who they're working for. When it comes to protecting what your members have earned, Labor First stands with you. Visit laborfirst.com to learn more.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the Labor Union Community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show with Jay Dot and Krause in the driver's seat for Krause. This is Jay Dot. Our guest is Ryan Sisted, Executive Director of Better in Our Backyard. And Ryan, there's so much to talk about when it comes to Better in Our Backyard. And I'm not going to, unfortunately, be able to get to it. But one of the things that, you know, you guys educate people on the our traditional energy, on our pipeline industry, on our mining industry, and a lot of the same stuff that we do here, not in those particular areas, although we do get into the mining, we certainly are appreciative and love what you guys are doing out there, because it's such a great thing. And having said that, you know, when I want to get right into the reason we came onto the program, because I you wouldn't believe all the notes I have. I'd just like to say, I'm going to shout out to Glenn, our producer. Glenn, I want you to extend this program for another 3 hours, or we have Penn State football coming up after. Yeah, they might get mad at me. Anyway, having said that, Ryan, you got a big event coming up, okay? And this is, I know this is your baby. It's a first annual event, and let's talk about that. The first annual Mining and Energy Expo, October 1st to the 3rd, hosted by Better in Our Backyard. Talk about it, my friend.
Yeah, well, yeah. So so at Better in Our Backyard, I try to make sure that we run anywhere from 3 to 5 events a year, and or at least average one a quarter. And we have an annual winter dinner in Duluth, Minnesota, that's been very successful for us, and it's just been great for industry. And this last January, we had over 500 people show up, and 80 of them came from outside of Minnesota. And as we've been growing nationally this year, I've been wanting to do an event that is still in Minnesota, but still could be applicable to, you know, our friends in Ohio or Pennsylvania or Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, all across the country. And, you know, and part of, I've always thought that we could do something like this. It's a pretty big undertaking to do a conference. There's a lot of risk involved. You got to, you know, whatever venue you choose, you want to do it at a hotel, and that hotel wants you to take out so many rooms and et cetera, or, you know, spend so much money on food that you're obligated to, even if you don't have enough people showing up, you know, for all that food or for all those rooms. So it's a pretty big undertaking. And luckily we were able to partner with a local company here in the area that, you know, believed in my vision for it and my board's vision for the expo. And And part of my thought process for it too is that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to travel the country and speak at different conferences and go to different conferences as the association's been growing. And I've just always had in the back of my mind that this is something that we can do. And long term, you know, it's next week and we're probably going to have roughly 300 people show up. And, you know, hopefully a few years from now when we're talking again, you know, Joe, you're going to do a show live from the expo and we're going to have over 1,000 people there from in the mining space and the energy space and the data center space, even maybe even the timber space. And I just want this to become a very, you know, national cornerstone event for industry in general. And then long-term, selfishly on my end, what I hope it turns into is something that is not only extremely positive for the industry, but is a game changer for industry also in Minnesota. Cause you know, we have a lot of great proposed projects in Minnesota but we also have statewide leadership on a federal level or from our governor's office that, you know, they're very hesitant to show support for great projects that can, you know, create a lot of good paying union jobs. And it's pretty frustrating. And so I want this to turn into an event long term where it becomes big enough where our statewide leaders have no choice but to show up and thank people for coming because it's going to have a huge economic impact in whichever weeks that we do it in the future. And doing these conferences. And so right now we have nearly 300 reservations. We announced it back in May. We have over 50 confirmed speakers from across the country, including Ashley Burke from the National Mining Association. She's their lead comms person. And I think we have over, well, not think, I know we do. We have over 125 companies involved with it as well. And over, you know, 50 company sponsors that are with it. And it's just going to be a really good event. And the highlight of the whole thing too, is that we've been fortunate enough to land the Deputy Secretary, Kate McGregor, of the Department of Interior to be our premier keynote to close out our expo. And as I'm sure as you're aware, the Department of Interior, ever since there's been a change in administration, they've been very friendly to industry in general throughout the country. And so we're excited to have her.
And I'll tell you what, you know, you've done an incredible job. And I can say that the industry should be, I mean, all over this, okay, and we've had Ashley on our broadcast, and Rich from the National Mining Association, and certainly, you know, they do a fantastic job. And I just want to read something, okay? So when you talk about the mission, this is really interesting, because I was going to ask you, and I will ask you, aside from the keynote speakers, which you have in the who's who, okay, and by the way, AI's coming in now, so. As we know with the data centers, that's a game changer, but it still doesn't mean that these people are not, you know, willing to, you know, shut down ourselves and figure a way to screw it up. Okay. When you talk about a lot of these NGOs, okay. And in spite of the fact that we do it better in our backyard. And so having said that, when I look at the mission, okay. And I'm thinking about the event, okay, and I think about your networking events, okay? Promote responsible industrial development, okay? Educate young professionals, okay? That is incredibly important, okay? Because people need to be talking about this stuff and the great things about our traditional energy resources. Promote careers in the union building trades. I mean, you know, you have an incredible mix. And then obviously hosting the quarterly networking events. So when I ask you, who's going to be there along with the fantastic keynote speakers that you have? Who are the rank and file people that are going to be there?
What do you mean by that?
Regular folks like me.
Oh,
the 300 people that are going to be
there. Well, I mean, the local operating engineers are going to be there. And then we did try to get the National Building Trades there. And unfortunately, they've been busy. And then but in terms of rank and file, a lot of our members in Minnesota, and then also too, where this is new territory for me, is Spinner Backyard has, off the top of my head, I think we have 130 to 140 members now. Yep. And we, like I said earlier, we have over 125 companies attending, and 50 to 60 of them aren't even members of Spinner Backyard. They're people that are flying in from all across the country. So it's a lot of business development people. Because a lot of the focus of this event is that, you know, like in Minnesota, like we, you know, like as I was mentioning earlier, we're founded by PolyMet and proposed mining projects and pipeline projects, so like what with Enbridge was building with Line 3 and and now with the Great Lakes Tunnel Project in Michigan, you know, a lot of the people that are coming to are representatives of proposed projects, say in Montana or Nevada or Arizona, Alaska, and different part in, I would say, North Dakota too. And so it's a lot of reps, a lot of presidents and CEOs from those companies, and then a lot of the vendors and suppliers that would benefit from their project's success. And then locally in Minnesota too, where there's going to be, off the top of my head, I would say about 4 or 5 state senators and another probably 10 to 15 state representatives that will be there too to learn about the issues. And one of the things that I hope that they learn is, that's interesting, is that in Arizona, for example, like earlier I was saying that on average it takes 29 years of permit of mine. Well, in the U.S., for proposed mines, though, in the U.S. that are just on state and private land, if they're in a pro-mining jurisdiction, say like Arizona or Nevada or even Michigan, if a proposed project, let's say Joe is going to go start a new copper mine in Arizona and his deposit is only on private and state land, if you have a good project and you're meeting all the environmental requirements of the state of Arizona, and you've done your research and you've laid all the groundwork, you're going to get your project permitted in 3 to 5 years. Okay. And so one of the things that I'm hoping that, you know, that some regulators will see, or some of the state reps and state senators that are coming from the Twin Cities metro area that will be there, I hope it opens up their eyes a little bit to think that, holy crap, we can actually permit that, like there's states that are actually permitting mines in 3 to 5 years and they're still protecting the local environment. They're still producing responsibly. They're not polluting. I want them to see that, because we live in a state where, you know, PolyMet's North Met project, or now known as New Range Copper Nickel's North Met project, you know, they've been in the permitting process now for over 20 years. I mean, yeah. There's kids that have grown up on the Iron Range in northeastern Minnesota that are now old enough to drink and are whole, you know, that have been learning about a project their whole life. And now one shovel has hit the ground to build that mine. And I just want to open up their eyes a little bit. And a lot of it has to do, and this is where too, where it was, I'm kind of going on a, you know, tangent here, but this is where I've noticed where Better Backyard, where I saw an opportunity for us to scale across the country, is that every state seems to have one thing in common. It's very much metro versus rural. Like the rural communities understand what these projects mean to them and to their families very intimately. But it's oftentimes the metro area people that have a very negative opinion of, say, oil refineries or of a new mine being built or a new pipeline being built. And they think that they're being righteous while not being educated on the topic. Okay. And so a lot of the state reps and state senators are going to be showing up. I mean, they're from the Twin Cities metro area. And I'm hoping that they see that it is possible to permit new mines in a timely fashion, new pipelines in a timely fashion, and everything will still be fine.
Yeah, it's interesting, because permitting reform has been massive topic on our broadcast. Okay, and
as it should be. Yeah,
of course. I mean, obviously, with our standards here in the United States, if we can't do it here, like we talked about before, the mines they have in the Congo where the child labor, I guess it must be okay as long as we can't see it with our eyes. Okay, in other words, as long as it's over in the Congo, because here in the United States with our workforce, it certainly is, it's a struggle, because like I said, if we shut that operation down, we could not quickly replace it here in the United States. And so, no question about it. It's a massive undertaking, but I do think that educating our political leaders, and I think the question is, in a sense, well, why not us? In other words, the consequences of allowing this to go on and being dependent on, overseas places like China and the Congo for those resources is actually a crime. Okay. Like, yeah. Literally.
And it shouldn't be a part, and add to your point too, and sorry to interrupt. I mean, and it shouldn't be a partisan issue at all. Like when it comes to the subject of national security or where we want to, you know, source our minerals or our resources for energy so that we can turn the lights on. I mean, that should be an issue that everyone is on the same page on.
Okay. So having said that, let's delve into this, because, permitting reform is a big, obviously that's one of your key themes. Okay. That is a massive part of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, for people who, and it's in layman's terms, obviously if you're gonna you know, obviously open up a mine or a refinery or another traditional energy facility or project or plant, you need to get permitting. Okay, one of the things I was going to say to you, Ryan, as you're talking, you talk about the metro areas and obviously the rural areas. You know what's weird about that? In a lot of ways, what got me into this scenario with PES, when PES got shut down here, that was in Philly. But really, a lot of projects get shut down, and it's from people that aren't from anywhere near where the project is going. Okay,
that's
what happened here. Now, I'm a Democrat. I've been a proud Democrat my whole life. I'm a moderate. So common sense and energy has been my theme. I won't sacrifice anything for the environment. But until you tell me that we can't do it more efficiently and more environmentally sound than they're doing it in China, okay? Because you don't see anybody picketing over there, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. There's no. Okay. We have the standards here. If you want to make sure that emissions are lowered, we got to actually fit. You know, China's a part of the Paris Accord, right? Why? They're building. They're building coal fired power plants with no standards. Okay. I get. Coal fired power plants here. Our environmental standards are through the roof. Okay. Nobody's doing any. And I heard a rumor once, not long ago, that they were building them and they were going to shut them down when nuclear came in. And that's not happening. In other words, it's coming in, but they're not shutting down their coal-fired power plants that have no standards. And so the bottom line is, we have to work together, okay? This permitting issue. So let's get into that. We only have a few minutes left, but this is a big part of what you're talking about. So these jobs can happen. Okay, so we can get our plants and our mines and everything going, and so we could do it better than everybody else in our backyard. Okay, you mentioned line 3. That was refurbishing that, right?
Yeah, they were just replacing it.
Yeah.
And they still
gave them hell. Like, in other words, there was issues with it. They wanted to fix it. But you did a great job, and it came through, and thank God. But that's the kind of situation we're in. It's irrational, okay? Let's leave the holes. Let's leave the faulty issues with the pipeline, okay? Let's not fix it, okay? Thankfully that came through. What can we do now, okay? Because we got projects out there, great jobs. As environmentally sound as they can be on the planet, okay, what are the solutions to permitting reform?
It's a very good question, and it takes a lot to explain, but I would, my first thoughts, and it's nothing, backed by, any stats or whatever, but I was always impressed with Joe Manchin, or Senator Manchin, when he was in office, and how he always was very good at working with both Republicans and Democrats on this issue. And unfortunately, there's not more people like Joe Manchin in both sides of the aisle. So my first thoughts is that there needs to be a bipartisan understanding of why we need this. We need clean coal. We need nuclear. We need wind turbines. We need solar panels. We need pipelines. We need an all above the energy approach. And I think where politicians need to have an understanding too, to get to that bipartisan understanding, is that, I would say this, I do think it seems like 90 to 95% of the time it's conservatives that really understand that we do need permitting reform. And then Democrats kind of, seem to be a little bit behind on the issue, but what really opens up their eyes is when they know that they can't permit a wind project or a wind farm that they want to get permitted in a timely fashion, in the timely manner that they want it permitted. And that's when their eyes open up a little bit. That's what I've noticed anyway in my experience in Minnesota and from what I've read. And so I think there just needs to be an understanding that if this doesn't get done, the projects in your district, let's say if you're in DC, if there's a Democrat from California and a Republican in Wyoming, duking it out over permitting reform, the perfect scenario would be is, them both coming to an understanding that, oh crap, I can't build my wind farm in Southern California, and I can't build my nuclear facility in Wyoming. if we don't come to an agreement on this issue to make sure that we have very strong, comprehensive permit reform in a sense. And by comprehensive permit reform, I'm meaning that we permit projects in a timely fashion while still making sure that the projects are adhering to the best environmental standards and labor standards in the world, which we're already meeting. It's just that we need to get to a point where we're actually permitting projects in a 3 to 5 year fashion, or even under 5 years, in knowing that, you know, we're going to get the energy that we need every day. So that's just kind of my first thought, is that I think we have to, and that's just politics. You have to find things that both sides can relate on. And that's the one thing that I've seen, is that there's, you know, renewable energy projects that are taking forever to get permitted too. And I think that's what's opening up Democrats' eyes too, a little bit. And also too, I think both sides can come together too, is that this is really a national security issue. Do we want China and other countries to stay ahead of us when it comes to energy? I don't.
No question about that. And we, you know, our petrochemical industry, our refineries, working incredibly hard on the same issue. And so is obviously the people at Marcellus Shell, okay, our natural gas industry down here. I mean, we have all kinds of resources, and this is a ridiculously important, you know, issue to us, okay? And let me ask you, well, you know, at the conference, will there be a lot of discussion about AI, and how do you think AI plays into a lot of these permitting issues?
I haven't really thought of it from a permitting standpoint. Obviously we got to permit new data centers, but data centers, they can actually choose on where they're built. So they're picking states that are friendly, that actually want to be built, and they're picking, you know, private lands. They're trying to stay, you know, they try to stay away from state federal. When I think of AI, I actually think about the uptick in copper demand. And ironically enough that you're asking that question, I have a family member that's in the AI industry, and I was trying to get a session going on AI between a person that's an expert in AI and then a person that's an expert in the copper space, because as AI technologies are increasing, we're going to need a lot more copper to meet those demands and to build those data centers. And we're going to need a lot more iron workers to lay the iron too for those data centers. So, but I haven't really thought of it from a permitting standpoint. I think when I think of AI, I think of more of how much more energy intensive are we going to be as a society moving forward, and how much more mineral intensive are we going to be moving forward as well because of that technology.
No question. And you know, we need a lot of power for these data centers and our grid. Let's be real. I mean, and so at this point, I guess what I'm saying is, so we did a big summit here in PA. Donald Trump was there. Our governor was there. Shapiro, Senator McCormick. Okay. And, you know, and it was, what was amazing about it was at Carnegie Mellon, I wasn't there, but you know, it was Democrats and Republicans, for a common goal. This was just in July. And so,
very cool.
You know, I mean, you're talking, and so you can see, the tide turning here, because there's nothing getting in the way of artificial intelligence. Okay.
No,
and in a sense, you know, you hope it's the great equalizer and common sense. Because my goal is, you know, look, I'm not one of those dudes that's like, you know, industry at all costs over the environment. You know, I don't think it needs to be that way under any circumstances.
I don't think any of us are that way. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But you have a extreme left element that wants to shut everything down. And then I sit here and I'm just sitting here going, well, the demand's not going down. You don't want to open anything. We don't want to have permits. You want to shut down big projects. You want to shut down existing locations. Where are we getting the resources? We're getting them overseas where they don't do it as well as us. Now, I'm an idiot, okay? I mean, I had no background. I thought that I was a dinner table environmentalist and all that stuff. I had no background in any of this stuff. But damn. Okay, I just a simple question: where are we getting the resources if we don't do it here with the standards that we have? Yes, I want to hold our traditional energy industry to its highest standards environmentally. Also, obviously, renewables are here to stay. Work together, like you just mentioned, Ryan. All of the above. Now, there are some people that don't believe in all of the above strategy, but guess what? I'm I'm not one of those people. Okay, you work together.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it's like, well, you think of like warm, like there's a lot of people that dig at solar panels and wind turbines, and I certainly have been guilty of that in the past. But you know, why would you stop an Arizona farmer from wanting to install a bunch of solar panels when they're getting sun 90% of the year? You know, like, and not, I mean, that's obviously a very good application for them to get energy.
So,
but why are we going to stop a coal miner from mining coal in the eastern part of the country when that's a very good driver for energy in colder climates? Like every area part of the country is going to be different, and they're going to need different forms of energy. And it's not a one size fits all approach. And that's why we need to be open to all forms of it.
And why would we shut ourselves down and then still need the same resources? Okay. And so,
exactly.
We only have a couple minutes left.
Okay.
Graham, what do we got? 2 minutes? Okay. So, look, Brian, unbelievable job. You're doing incredible out there. Okay. I mean, the industry out there, I mean, I know they're incredibly excited about it and what you're doing. This the expo is it's the first one and it's going to be historic and it's only going to build. Any closing comments when it comes to this? Anybody wants to get tickets? Okay. Last minute tickets and at the same time, if they want to join your organization.
Just visit our website, betterinourbackyard.com. We're in the middle of relaunching a new website, so there's some updates that need to be made. We've been growing pretty quick this past year, so there's still a lot of, like, a Minnesota or upper Midwest focus feel to it, and we want to revamp it to make it more of a national look since we are growing nationally. But you can find more information on our website. We also have a LinkedIn event page that's very active. We're posting every day, and you can register up until the day of the event, which is Wednesday of next week, and it's going to run through Friday morning. And also too, Joe, I mean it when I say it, in future expos, we'd love to have you do a live show during the expo. I've invited a couple radio people and podcasters to the event next week, and I want to continue rolling that because I think it'd be kind of fun to have more media involved as we move forward. And I think you'd be perfect to be a part of it.
Well, listen, I really appreciate it. Well, by the way, we did the Insight Shale convention 2 years ago, and it was fantastic. And it's funny because Jim Welty, who's the president of Marcellus Shale Coalition, just said the same exact thing. So we look forward to that. And of course, I'll take you up on your invitation. We are so excited for you. We wish you all the best. And I can't thank you enough, Ryan Sisted, for joining us on this broadcast, my friend. Better in Our Backyard, the Mining and Energy Expo. Fantastic job, Ryan.
Appreciate it, Joe. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate the opportunity.
It's our pleasure. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Labor and Energy Show here on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT. On behalf of Joe Kraus, I'm Joe Dougherty. Shout out to Glenn, our producer. Thanks for listening, everybody.
The Labor and Energy Alliance would like to thank the following organizations for your generosity and support. Together, we are educating listeners and changing the narrative, one broadcast at a time. The American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, PBF Energy, Monroe Energy, Steamfitters Local 420, EQT Corporation, Marcellus Shale Coalition, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters, United Steelworkers, National Mining Association, and the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Labor and Energy Alliance or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/arrow. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop, we've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Deck your home with Blinds.com. DIY or let us install. Free design consultation. Plus free samples and free shipping.
Ho, ho, ho! Blinds.com invented a better way to buy custom high-quality window treatments with no showroom mock-ups or waiting around for quotes from pushy salespeople, saving you time and money for the holidays with upfront pricing right on our website.
Go right now to Blinds.com. Satisfaction guaranteed.
Satisfaction guaranteed.
Head to Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second, and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.